Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together, we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn.
Welcome, welcome. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and I'm here with Sarah Beckman. She is a speaker, writer, and blogger with a degree in journalism from the University of Wisconsin. She's the founder of the Salt and Clay Ministries. Her passion is loving her neighbor, and it was and has fueled her life ministry for over 10 years. She's been blogging for over 7 years at sarahbeckman.org and is a regular contributor for dynamiccommunicators.com. That's all one word. Her own health trials, coupled with her experience walking alongside countless people facing trial, include 3 with terminal illness, and has provided her authentic and compelling experiences that are filled in this book called Alongside, A Practical Guide for Loving Your Neighbor in Their Time of Trial. And as we know, the scriptures tells us that everyone is our neighbor. So this is going to be a great adventure that we're going to take. And Sarah, I'd like you to set the stage by just reading a portion of your chapter. I think it was in part 2, taking... No, I don't know.
Yep, you're correct. Was it?
Yeah. Oh, I'm correct. Okay, so it was in part 2, taking action. Would you set the stage for us with that story?
Sure. It was a regular Wednesday afternoon in April when the phone rang. After a long, hard winter, the snow had melted away and the kids were playing outdoors. The sun was finally shining and we were basking in its rays, in the happiness, warmth, and light can bring. And then my next-door neighbor called with horrible news. Our mutual neighbor, John, had died suddenly of a heart attack. In an instant, our world was enveloped in darkness. It was shocking. I thought of his wife, Deborah, and her 2 precious sons, tragically left without a husband and dad. I thought of John with his compelling smile and his jolly belly-rolling laughter. I pictured him playing catch with his son in the yard or opening the car door for his beautiful wife, dressed for an evening out. Gone? I stood stunned. Now's the time I'm supposed to do something, right? I stared across the street at the perfectly manicured yard and the impeccably painted gray house with white trim. I had no idea what to do. My neighbors and I commiserated, cried, and shared our disbelief. John had been out of state on a business trip when he died, so Deborah would be heading to the airport to get on a plane. I didn't have long to decide, stay home or go to her. I braved the 40 yards of concrete and knocked on Deborah's door. That walk across the cul-de-sac changed the trajectory of not just our relationship, but also my understanding of what people need in the face of hardship. It awakened an understanding of what it looks like to love your neighbor through some of life's most difficult circumstances. I've never regretted the decision to go.
What a beautiful introduction to a great topic. And this hits me personally because, I think that maybe worldwide, 2016 was a tough year.
Right.
First, my father got sick, and then he died. Mm. And then my sister, and she's like 10 years younger than I am, she got sick, and then she died.
Oh.
And the wonderful support that we felt. But as I've been reading your book, I go, yeah, that happened, you know, where people came and said, you should do this, you should do that, you should do this, or if you had done that. And my mother had passed away a few years ago, and some kind pastor said, you know, if you'd had enough faith, you would not have lost your mother. So you have these well-meaning people who hate to see you go through these trials, and this is finally a guide. It's called Alongside. And when I first saw the title, of course, I didn't know what Alongside meant. But then as I began to read the book, I'm going, everyone needs to read this, because as long as we live on this planet, we're going to be faced with these kinds of trials where we lose loved ones It can be for a variety of reasons. It doesn't have to just be death. Sometimes they just lose their cognitive ability and they're not who they are anymore. Sometimes they move away, sometimes divorce. And so we're going to talk about that, and I'd like to start with chapter 2 of your book alongside. I'm talking to Sarah Beckman, and this first chapter starts with a secret that you want us to know. So what is that secret?
Yeah, I think that, and first of all, let me just say, Rose, how hard for you. What a hard time, 2016.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, what great loss you must have faced and still are, I'm sure, today facing. So that's what I found some people are experiencing when they read the book. They're reliving grief. And so if that was hard for you, I'm just praying God's comfort in that for you. But the big secret is it's not about you. Meaning, it's not about me, the person who wants to love someone else in trial. It's about the person that's facing the trial, the cancer, the illness, the divorce, the unemployment, the infertility. You name the trial. We need mm-hmm. to put our focus on those people and not make it about us. And so that's really more challenging than you think, because
yes.
we have a desire to know the scoop or to get the information or insert ourselves and feel valuable and feel like we're doing something to help. And there's a lot of ways that we lose sight of the fact that it is not, it's not about us. It's about what they need mm-hmm. and how can we gift them? How can we best serve them? How can we really truly love them? And what does that look like? And that's woven throughout the whole book, this theme of it's not about you. It's about the person you're trying to help.
Yeah, as I thought about that in my own experience, my sister was diagnosed with terminal cancer and then went into hospice. So every day I would go and work with her doing physical therapy and stuff. And I really had to set my own grief aside mm-hmm. and just... My listeners know that I weep a lot.
It's okay.
they're great. Okay, so now... setting that aside, it's not about you, is really a tough thing, because if someone is that you care about is, you know, dying,
right.
it just gets you. You go, no. But it's not about you, and God can give you such power. I had so much self-control. That was supernatural.
Yes, right. How can we separate it and grieve in safe places away from that person? I remember visiting my best friend, and she just received a bone marrow transplant, and she was sicker than I've ever seen anyone alive look. And she basically, they kill you in order to bring you back
yeah.
to life. And I'd never seen anything like that in a living body, the way she looked, how
yes.
bloated and low. Oh. And it was really hard. And I remember, I mean, I was one of the few people that had the privilege of visiting, right? So I wasn't mm-hmm. going to screw that up. But when I was there, I was strong. And what can I do?
Yes.
And I walked out of that hospital and I got on the phone and I called my sister and I sobbed.
Yes.
And I said, thank you that I can just tell you how hard that was, but I had to stay strong for my friend because I love her. And I don't want to make it worse. She knows I love her. She knows I'm very sad, but it doesn't help her when I'm sitting there crying and can't control my emotions.
Yes. Yeah. And that, you know, that really is a tough thing. And if you do remember, it's not about you, and then just focus on God,
right.
it will stay us through. We had... during this time, you know, since the diagnosis till her demise in December, well, a little boy that she had babysat and the whole family was close to our family, a freak accident in October, they're out doing a hayride, and the little boy, he was playing with a stick, and it caught him and threw him under the hay wheel wagon, and he was crushed and killed.
Oh.
And it rocked the whole community. You know, it just rocked us. It was so devastating. And my son, who's 35 years old and the principal of the school that this little boy went to. Well, the parents really, they needed him. They needed his strength. He didn't have any. I mean, it was devastating for him as well. But, you know, you set aside your own, we're not made to die. And, you know, and so it's just repels us. It's just against everything that God created us to be, which is live and vibrant. And he did. He talks about how he just prayed and prayed, you know, God, help me to be, you know, help me to remember that it's not about me, even though I've been touched by that, you know, right. Help me to remember. Okay, so let's go to chapter one,
Heart Matter.
Well, I want to go to chapter three first.
Perfect. I'm with you.
I'll just have my poor listeners jumping all over the place here. Now, there's a website that they can go to see more of this book or get or obtain this book. Anyway, this chapter three has so many resources in it, too, of websites that help. So I just really want to unpack chapter three and then... I'm talking with Sarah Beckman, and we're talking about her book, Alongside, and it's a practical guide for loving your neighbor, loving that family member, loving that church member, loving even the person that's maybe on that fourth tier in their time of trial, because we have so many trials. And as we share our trials, we can walk on that bridge together and know that God really loves us, and he loves us through other people. We're going to take a break right here, and then we're going to unpack chapter three in the know. We'll be right back.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com.
Welcome back. I'm talking with Sarah Beckman, and this has been an intense show because we're talking about really the trials that we face on this planet. And we're talking about her book called Alongside, A Practical Guide for Loving Your Neighbor in Their Time of Trial. And before the break, I already pointed out that neighbor means the person that God has brought into your circle of influence. So now we're talking about chapter three, In the Know. And this is where you really begin to lay out how to know what to say and do in the right place. So first, give us the big picture.
Yeah, so I think the first thing that we need to do, much like anything, before you embark on a journey, you wouldn't go without a map, and you wouldn't, you know, just set out without making some sort of plan. And I think the thing we get stuck on is that we feel like there's so much need in the world that we can't help everybody. So then what happens is we help nobody. And then or there's a friend that we think about and we just feel so unequipped that we then don't do anything, even though we want to, and then we walk away later feeling guilty. And even for years, I know people who have felt a lot of guilt. So the first thing that we need to do to help combat that is to have people really assess, what's your relationship? What is your place in this person's life? And I created what I call the tier system of relationship. And basically, tier one is that you're really close, like you with your sister, your mom, your dad, your best friend, your spouse. You know, that's a person that's a tier one relationship, and you will have a very different role in their life and supporting them than you would if you didn't know the person at all, which is tier four, is you don't know them personally or you frequently see them, or you never met them, but maybe you heard their story. Like, I'm hearing this story about this sweet boy, and just, my heart is crushed. Mm-hmm. Family. And so, you know, in that case, I might send a card to a complete stranger, tier four. But the tier two and three is where a lot of people have found sort of this enlightenment and realizing there is some distinction to figure out, how well do I know them and what's my role. So tier two is really like that friend, coworker, you know, if you are going to see them more on a regular basis. But then tier
church
three,
member,
Yeah.
Church member.
They're not your tier one. You might not be spending weekends with them or hanging out all the time, but you see them regularly. And there's definitely someone you would call a friend. And tier three would be more of an acquaintance. You know of them. You might be school. Your kids might be in the same class, but you don't serve with them. Or you might see them at church. They're a church member, but you've never met them personally, or, you know, that kind of thing. So throughout the book, I weave together the notion that you need to assess what tier you're in, and that gives you appropriate ways to help. And what I've found is it's so freedom giving and permission giving people to say, maybe that's not my person to help. And if you can say that about the two thirds that you hear about every single day, then you maybe are more equipped to help the one third that you are tier one or tier two for. And then you can find appropriate ways to help. So you don't walk around just helping no one because you don't know how. You really assess your place and say,
yes,
this is my, I'm called to help in this situation because of the relationship I have with them. These are things I can do.
So then after you know your place, then you need to know the needs.
Right. Yeah.
So what are some of the needs?
Yeah. You know, at the initial onset, there's always sort of that influx. You know, right now I have a neighbor at this very moment who had knee surgery today. And, you know, I said, here, let's talk through what the needs are. And one of the needs is, you know, how are the kids going to be managed getting to and from the events? What's your husband's schedule? Now you can't drive, these kinds of things. So, you know, childcare or tending to the kids, what they're doing. Food, of course, is always a big one. And that's, as church people, we go to the food right away. That's first on the list. But, you know, it can be a huge burden to manage food, because if you are in a community that serves in that way or regularly brings meals, or, you know, has a meal ministry type thing, it can be a lot to manage. And so getting a handle on that right away, are people bringing tons of meals? Are they calling the family direct? So there's ways to sort of set up systems that are helpful so that it just relieves the burden. The whole goal is to relieve the burdens from the family. And that's why the know the needs list is really important. Are these things being handled? Is
someone
touch and base with these?
Now, you give a few websites. Are these websites that you have vetted and,
and
people have recommended?
I haven't used it myself. Yeah.
Okay. So I just go through them briefly and what each one does.
Yeah. So Caring Bridge, a lot of people are probably familiar with, but Caring Bridge is one where you can keep people updated. And I have found that that is so helpful to eliminate false information, to eliminate people talking about things they shouldn't be sharing, what's not theirs to share. Mm-hmm. You know, what the family would want public, they could put on Caring Bridge. And a great way to come alongside a friend is to offer to post. If you're a writer,
yes,
or even if you're not, but if you're close, a tier one, it's a great way to serve a family, because that's oftentimes they just need to release that, but they still need to communicate, because otherwise it just becomes very difficult for them to manage texts, phone calls, emails, stops by. If you can get that Caring Bridge in place to keep people informed, they can post comments, they can cheer you on, they can pray for you, and it just helps sort of an interface. So that one's invaluable. I love Care Calendar. That one kind of does meals and errands, helping. When I had one of my very large back surgeries, a 3-month recovery from spinal fusion, we used Care Calendar, and we had people on there that came to clean. We had people that did errands. We had meals. It was all in the Care Calendar. And you can do updates on it too, because I didn't need a Caring Bridge, but I could also update people that were following along with the journey.
Excellent.
Yeah, lots of Helping Hands. Take Them a Meal. They're all just a little different, and I describe them really well in the book, kind of what services they offer, so that you would know which is the right tool for you.
Yes, and does it seem as life goes on that there's more and more need for these types of support?
Yeah.
The technology, we need to use it as part of our ministry. And then you have a section on knowing the person. How does that fit in?
Yeah, I think it just, you know, it leads us to thinking more about that notion of it's not about us. And so there's sort of these common truths in there that we really need to be thinking about and offer so much grace, right? We can't expect our friend to respond the way they used to. If they're in a life-changing, life-altering crisis and they didn't text us back, let's not take offense. Give them grace. This is a very hard time they're facing. And we need to really think about what they're going through, not how we're feeling. So, you know, they aren't always thinking clearly. They might not have a great, easy time accepting help. So we need to try and find ways to combat them receiving the help we're trying to offer. And I go through that in the book too, as you know, just kind of talking about making specific offers of help. And they're also struggling to accept a new reality. So we have to really give them margin and space and respect that. And again, not expect them to be someone that they can't be right now. You know, maybe they called us every day or responded all the time, or they were our person, or they went to coffee or they went to movies and now they just can't. So we have to give them margin and grace to really accept what's going on. And so many people, this whole checklist came from the people I interviewed. I interviewed over 50 people and said what was helpful and what was not. And these common truths made this list. This checklist is out of the mouth of people. And if I heard it once, I heard it 50 times. And myself experienced it. And I'm sure everyone reading the book is nodding along saying, right, we want you to just support me. We will keep your mouth closed and guard your tongue and not take offense and serve out of love and respect my privacy and help me keep things normal and hear me and give me my timetable. I mean, they're just all things that I made a checklist out of what people said to me.
Yes. And I promised the listeners that we would go back to chapter one, the heart of the matter. And I think this is so important because this actually is the foundation upon which your ministry was birthed. So just give us an overview of it as we conclude the show.
Yeah. The quest that I went on as a new believer, I was in my 30s when I really came to saving faith. And the quest that I went on was sort of these words that were in red, that Jesus's words in the Gospels. And there was some that really tripped me up. And this love your neighbor as yourself thing was really hard to get a handle on. And so I kind of decided that I wanted to understand that more and put meat on its bones. And the more I determined that Jesus' second most important command that he gave us is to love our neighbor as ourself, right? So first is love me with your whole mind, heart, soul, strength. And second is love your neighbor. And he kind of says nothing else matters, right? Love God and love others. And so I took that as a central part of my faith, that I am called to love others, even the hard to love. And for whatever reason, what happened for me was that God said, there is a unique opportunity to love someone when they are in a weak and broken and hard trial of a place. And even if they are a believer, even more, we come along, we shine the light, we remind them of the truth that they know, we pray with them. But if they don't know the Lord, if they don't have a saving faith, if they don't profess a belief in something, it is the opportunity is not like any other time. There is a door that is open in hardship that is not open very many other times when we're large and in charge of our life. And so as people of faith who want to follow this great command, our job is to walk through that door and be brave enough and bold enough to walk through with God on our side. And that's why I walked across the street, because I thought, I don't get a choice. I believe in Jesus, and I don't get a choice to go comfort a grieving widow who doesn't go to church, because I might be the only talk of God or hope that she gets in this day. So that's why I walked across the street, and God kind of changed that trajectory of my life after that.
Amen. And I've been talking to Sarah Beckman about her book called Alongside. And I just thank you, Sarah, for spending this time with us. I know it's been encouraging to me and will be encouraging to my listeners. And I have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
Oh, thank you.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.